Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, it's 9 o'clock on a Tuesday. That means the power rankings are out. And as we do every Tuesday at 9 o'clock, we check in and see where the experts think the Texans are, and we do that by ranking the experts. We power rank the power rankings at 9 a.m. There's four of them we use for this exercise, in no particular order yet. ESPN.com, TheAthletic.com, CBSSports.com, and SI.com, Sports Illustrated. So let's do this here. We power rank the power rankings, starting with number four, The Athletic, which Seth has the Texans at number 15. This is about as low as the Texans have been on people's power rankings all season long. They've spent the entire season, for the most part, hovering at worst like around 12 or 13 till the last couple weeks. They've gotten as high as 3 or 4 when they were 6-2 earlier this year. I think both you and I thought it might have been a little bit of fool's gold at that point, just based on how...
I mean, they were playing like a 500 football team, no matter what their record was over the course of the first half of the season.
Yeah.
You know, the point differential would show you that. They had scored about the exact same number of points as they'd had scored against them. I think the fact that some of these places love the advanced stats, and like the Texans look better on some of the advanced stats than they actually are in reality, including on defense. I think they're overrated defensively in some ways. As much as it feels like, oh, the Texans suck, like, no, they're a 500 football team. They play and compete like a 500 football team. They lose to some bad teams. They beat other mediocre and bad teams. They've only beat one good team all year long, and then they've lost to other good teams. So just this last week notwithstanding, it's been like a 500 football team the entire year.
And in that division, that's good enough to clinch the division with 3 weeks left in the season. You know, that's just how it is. The category for the Athletic, by the way, the Texans were 13th last week, so the loss to the Ravens pushed them down two spots with the Athletic. The category they do in terms of the topic for each team is what's next. And I don't know if it means what's next after the season or what's next this week or whatever, but for the Texans, I think this applies regardless of whether next means today or in a month. Self-scouting for the offensive coaching staff. Mm-hmm. Offensive coordinator Bobby Slowik did so well in 2023 that he got head coaching interviews in the offseason. He might get fired this offseason. Houston has dropped from 12th in yards per play and 15th in EPA, expected points added per play, to 24th and 25th this season. And if I stop right there, there was a period earlier this season where a lot of the stats for the Texans were they've been this bad over the last 4 weeks, or they've been this bad. The last 2 months have dragged this offense down so drastically. This is where they are for the year. They're a bottom quartile offense by, in my mind, two of the most important, if not the two most important metrics that measure offensive play, other than scoring points, because I know that's what you're going to say. But yards per play and EPA per play are big efficiency measurements, I think, and they're horrible at both of those things right now.
Yeah, especially when it comes to how routinely can you successfully run the football.
Yes.
Very, very rarely is that the case. It's great when they do it well, because Joe Mixon ends up with huge yardage. I got annoyed at somebody on X the other day because he did the thing which I hate most, is he tried to use an argument based on something I never said, which is he said, well, so Bobby wasn't an issue before, but now he's an issue this year. That's not what I heard in the offseason. Like, no, what I said the entire offseason was Bobby Slowik was promising he's got to show that he can actually establish a respectable rushing attack, not even a league-leading rushing attack, but he's not a proven commodity as an offensive coordinator. That was the big question. And in that regard, he still has very much not proven that. And then on the other side, just in the passing game and with everything else, offensive coordinators are just like quarterbacks. It's once the league has film on you and they start to get to know your tendencies and your strengths and weaknesses, it's harder in the second year. Yeah. And like so far, it's, you could argue about how much Bobby Slowik is to blame or not, but there's no way you can argue that he hasn't proven anything positive this year.
Right.
You can make excuses for him, but there's, you got to concede that he hasn't shown anything positive, or to just show that he's built on the promise that he had last year.
Well, he doesn't even have good answers when you ask him what they do well. Like he said, explosives, and I'm like, okay, well, where are all
the
these?
Explosives have largely been Nico or Joe Mixon being a superhero.
Yes.
Like I said that a few weeks ago, it feels like a bad high school team that has a couple of future pro football players.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You know, like it's enough that they just win with those guys, but they're doing nothing else offensively.
Offensively,
to really help.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. All right, number three, power ranking of the power rankings, SI.com, which also has the Texans at 15th, down four from number 11 last week. So the Baltimore Ravens, the loss to the Ravens, at this juncture in the year, you fall four spots. That's a pretty big dip. And Connor Orr says this about the Texans, Seth. All of the biomarkers in a massive loss to the Ravens in which the offense was shut out were troubling. C.J. Stroud again looked frozen against split safety looks. The defense was stomped out by Derrick Henry. Houston's not alone there. And that's Connor Orr saying that, not me. And Lamar Jackson was allowed to spend more time from snap to throw than at any point this season with no punishment. That's pretty damning. Barring a major identity shift, the Texans are looking like a prime candidate to get boat raced just as their playoff journey begins.
Yeah. As far as what he's talking about, CJ reacting to shell coverages and all of that, it was watching the Bengals and the Texans in that same several-day window. Man, Joe Burrow was just thrashing the Broncos over the middle, in the soft spots, in zone. It was really interesting because the one starting cornerback there for the Broncos has kind of been he's had health issues. And when they had to play zone and when he was out of the game, man, Burrow just thrashed him. So I'm watching, I'm thinking, all right, boy, he's pulling the trigger really fast. But also, you got to concede that, man, he's also throwing to wide receivers that have been with him for a long time. And it's a more balanced offense. There's more. Oh, yeah. The linebackers were actually biting on the play action. Where with the Texans, they just don't bother. No. The linebackers just kind of sit back and they're like, I'll come up and make a tackle when it's
right,
time.
Right, right.
Like I'm because like, what am I worried about these guys? No.
Yep. All right. Number two, power ranking of the power rankings, CBSSports.com. That would be Pete Prisco. The Texans are 14th, holding steady at number 14 on CBSSports.com. Here's what Pete Prisco says. He's always very brief. They got rocked by the Ravens on Christmas Day and seem to be limping into the playoffs. They are locked in as the fourth seed, but they don't look like one. Actually, they do. The fourth seed is typically the worst of the four division winners. They look like that.
Yeah, what are you talking about, Prisco? Every year there's a couple of four seeds that you're like, oh, they should be the seventh seed.
Right, No, they look exactly like a four seed. Mackie, I tell you. So 14th on CBSSports.com.
I think also, though, too, like, yeah, okay, they don't look like they should be a four seed, but the other than the AFC North winner, whoever the sixth and seventh seed, like they've got their blemishes and flaws.
Sure.
Too. So it's not, I don't think it's not as big an insult as Prisco, I think, is kind of presenting it.
Are the Texans favored at home against the Steelers or the Chargers, do you think? Like, will they be a favorite at NRG? Against the Steelers, as you and I have pointed out several times, they may not even be the home team.
I think they'll be favored at home because of how the defense has played versus those two quarterbacks. Like, you know, the Chargers have had some lulls offensively. It really is just the last couple of weeks that they got it going again offensively. And then, like, Russell Wilson has looked like the best version of Russell Wilson and the worst version of Russell Wilson at times this season. So I think the Texans will be favored in both those games. And it'll be a surprise to a lot of people locally because it feels like they shouldn't be favored to anybody. But the way they build the lines and everything, I'll be surprised if they're not favorites.
I'll be surprised if they're not favorites. I'll be shocked if they're more than a field goal favorite.
Yeah, they'll need that home field advantage,
yes,
perhaps to get that 3 points is going to be the crucial factor in them being favored.
Yeah, I think if you played either of those teams on a neutral field right now, if you made the Texans a favorite on a neutral field, I think the money would go
okay,
hardcore to Steelers or the Chargers.
Now we're thinking like handicappers. So, yeah, on an even field, either of those. Yeah, so it ends up, Texans end up being like a 1.5 point favorite for either of those games.
That sounds about right. That's exactly what I was thinking, 1.5, 2 points for me on that one. Number one, power ranking of the power rankings, ESPN.com, which has been the most bullish on the Texans throughout their tumultuous last 8 weeks. They were 10th last week, even though they were 3-4 in their last seven games going into that Ravens game. So they fall four spots in the eyes of ESPN. This is DJ Bienname typing this. Biggest offseason contract to watch. This is a good category. Biggest offseason contract to watch. And DJ Bienname says Stephon Diggs. Says Diggs proved his value to the Texans on and off the field through the first 8 weeks with him. C.J. Stroud had a QBR of 60.5. That's 10th. But since Diggs tore his ACL, Stroud has a QBR of 40.4, 29th through week 17. So CJ has gone from a top 10. He was a top 10 quarterback with Diggs. He is in like rookie Bryce Young range without Diggs.
So with Diggs, it'll be interesting. He turns 32 this year. By this year, I mean 2025.
Yeah.
He turns 32. He's coming off of an ACL. I think the Texans would like to have him back. The reality of the situation is he's a 32-year-old coming off of an ACL injury. What does that contract look like? My fear would be that as much as Stephon Diggs was a model citizen while he was here, does he at some point feel disrespected by playing for whatever the Texans think is the fair price for Stephon Diggs? Sometimes it doesn't feel like disrespect in the moment, and then you get and all of a sudden you're playing really well. I guess that's the only thing I worry about. And if it's, I don't want to re-sign a 32-year-old wide receiver coming off of a ACL if it means you're turning down drafting a wide receiver or signing a younger free agent. So I'm open to whatever they do with it. I'm not hungry to get Stephon Diggs back on the team.
Yeah, I think something that should be pointed out without getting too cap nerdy about it is the Texans. We know that the Texans took Stephon Diggs' 4-year contract and took all the guaranteed money and basically just made it a 1-year deal, a 1-year $22 million deal for Diggs. They took about $16 million of that and crammed it into voidable years in the future. So there, if Stephon Diggs leaves, there is a credit card statement coming due for the Texans of several million dollars.
So for both parties, the Texans, it might be worth their while just like to maybe give a contract that's a bit more, if they can rework it into an extension.
Yeah.
So they give them a contract maybe that's a bit more than what others would pay, but it helps them out with the cap because they can spread it out more.
In the short term. Yeah. So it's worth noting. I mean, I think ultimately the biggest thing with Diggs is how do they feel about the knee at that age, you know, is just...
You also get... Now, this is the thing. If you get a compensatory pick back, potentially, I could see Diggs going to start ring chasing. So maybe he goes to a place where he actually plays a lot, gets a lot of production, and they end up getting a really good compensatory pick out of it.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. Text message. Bobby Slowick. Listening to Slowick speak at press conferences reminds me of a salesperson BSing their sales manager about their pipeline to avoid getting fired. I've made that comparison several times. When somebody's just up there just freestyling and just trying to survive till the next forecast is due,
The way it went, I mean, he gave an answer about what they looked, you know, what they did during the bye week and what they were trying to identify, and one of it was identifying the strengths. On the next question, when asked, what are those strengths, he didn't have an answer at the ready. Now he also did say, okay, maybe I got to back up. He prefaced it by saying, I don't want to give you all the secrets or anything. But I don't know. I feel like that's like, okay, like any, if you're good at it, other teams are going to know you're good at it.
Yeah.
So that should be the question. What are you really worried that somehow other defensive coordinators haven't realized what you're good at doing?
Yeah.
I don't think that, like, what are other defenses? What are defenses going into a game saying? What they're saying is, we just got to take away Nico Collins as much as possible.
Yeah.
You know, we feel pretty good we're going to be able to stop the run. And it's as simple as that. Because Joe Mixon has done some really good things, but he's not a steady machine with this offensive line and with these tight ends blocking for him. And with the wide receivers aren't blocking the same way like the 49ers do when they're good. So, I think Nico Collins is the only answer.
Maybe the saddest thing for me about the Texans offense this year, for me personally, and I'm gauging kind of my reaction to things that happened this year, is that when Tank Dell went down with the injury, and this is before we knew the severity of the injury, like this is when we're just like, okay, well, Tank, you know, he's hurt, he's down. Is it my first football reaction? And obviously, my first personal reaction was, man, I hope he's okay. I love Tank Dell. My football reaction, like you're processing, like, what does this mean now? Like, what's this going to look like? My reaction was they weren't going to win with offense anyways in the postseason. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, even with Tank Dell, this is an offense that had sunk to the bottom quarter of the league in offenses. So part of me is like, all right, well, I wasn't counting on more than 17 points in a playoff game even with Tank Dell. You know, like, how much worse can it get?
You know, the thing is, if they were going to make a run, it was going to have to be something clicking in the passing game. And the part where you just wonder what might have been was, all right, in that Chiefs game, it looked way more like you were hoping it was going to look all season long. And so the Tank Dell injury, I think almost symbolically but also substantively, taking that away, pulling the rug out when, man, maybe it looks like maybe something is clicking here.
Yeah, that's true.
That's, and then in that very game, you get into the fourth quarter and the better team handles the fourth quarter better than the Texans without Tank Dell do. So yep. Who knows? Like that's a most positive spin I could put on an otherwise miserable season.
Yeah, yeah. A miserable season offensively. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, man, text message, three things CJ must fix in the offseason: pocket clock, escapability, accuracy. That's from Cyfair Frank also.
You know, the thing is, too, that he's done somebody on my YouTube channel had said that CJ needs to learn how to extend plays better. And that's actually not an issue. Like, he does pretty well on extended plays. Now, it's not like a high success rate on those to begin with, so it doesn't always feel that way. But in terms of EPA on throws, attempts that are like over 3.5 seconds long, it's Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Pat Mahomes, and CJ Stroud.
Yes.
CJ does a good job. The problem is the times I think he extends them too long at times, and that's where making the decision quicker to check down. He's gotten better as the season has gone along. Taking the easy money, all of that stuff. It's not that he can't extend the plays. It's that he's a little too dependent on extending the plays. He needs to just take the easy money more often.
Yeah, man.
That was number one. What was number two and
number
three?
Number one, pocket clock. Two, escapability. Three, accuracy.
Yeah. So pocket clock is right, like you're saying, number one. Escapability, I don't know how much you're going to do with that. I think the thing that I'm more concerned about his pocket movement, because I think last year as a rookie, he was really good as the season went along. It's starting to just, you know when to take just a half step to get to clear yourself some room to throw. And it feels like he's regressed as he's gotten bludgeoned week after week after week.
Dude,
I don't know if he's got the same feel for it.
I think I was having a conversation with a buddy yesterday about CJ, and my conclusion I came to is I think those 3 weeks, Green Bay, Indy, Jets game on Halloween night, those 3 weeks where the pressure rate was so extreme. It was like nearly 60% over the course of those three games, and he was getting hammered.
Yeah.
I think those three games damaged him. Like, well, not irreparably damaged him, but they 2024 damaged him.
And this is where, like, it's all interrelated, and that's what's so frustrating about trying to figure this stuff out. Is that the types of pressure that he's getting, it's right up the gut. Like, that Kyle Van Noy sack, it was, you know, the protection was right. They had the numbers matched up.
Yep.
CJ expects to get protection, but it's right up the gut. And, yeah, that's what screws your decision-making the most. That Dalton Schultz, the easy opportunity to throw to Dalton Schultz, you look at that, man, Laremy Tunsil's getting blasted into the backfield on a power rush. And the rest of the pocket there was no place for pocket movement there. It was so compressed. He had no opportunity to take a sidestep to the right to clear room because all those guys were getting destroyed. And, like, if there was a half yardage more space, so what CJ was waiting for was a route to clear downfield, and somebody was coming clear. But the pressure was right up in his lap. So, okay, yes, that should have been an easy throw to Dalton Schultz, but maybe only if he had gotten rid of the ball quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But why did he have to get rid of the ball quicker? Because Dalton Schultz got hung up in the backfield because Laremy Tunsil was getting destroyed, and the rest of the offensive line was getting destroyed as well.
Yep.
So it's just, it's all interrelated, and it's just all a big mess right now.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a New Year's Eve Tuesday. Appreciate you guys hanging with us and tuning in. Up next, the three biggest takeaways from D'Amico Ryan's press conference yesterday. There are big questions heading into this Week 18 matchup with the Titans. D'Amico gave us answers. We'll have them for you. Coming up next.
Yeah.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a New Year's Eve edition of the show. D'Amico Ryan's met with the media yesterday. Texans are off today. They're back at practice tomorrow. We'll get injury reports tomorrow, so we'll start to get some truth here on which guys may be resting due to injury or maybe, you know, we'll see how D'Amico handles this game. He was asked about it yesterday. Here was D'Amico Ryan's being asked, will you rest guys now that you're locked into the four seed?
Yeah, going into this game, as I mentioned to all our guys, that everybody has to be ready to go. And that's where we are. Everybody will be out there playing, and we'll, you know, we'll see how the game goes. But for us right now, we got to go play better. And our last outing on the field was not good enough, not representative of who we were, are defensively, offensively, just it's not a good representation of our team entirely. So we got to go out. We got to play better football.
Okay, so this is where this is how I read that. Where with coach speak or lying for gamesmanship or whatever else like that might go into play. Mm-hmm. Coaches, just like D'Amico Ryan's himself has said at various times, where he's says Derek Stingley isn't gonna follow Amari Cooper in the game.
Lo and
then
behold,
he does it.
Yeah,
right. Like, so D'Amico's capable of the coach speak. Everything that D'Amico said right there is true. With the asterisk that, like any other NFL game, injuries are going to factor into it. So I think that I'm guessing that the starters, for the most part, will play the first quarter. I think there will be guys who have injury issues that in any other regular season game, it wouldn't have held them out. But if they've got something that could get better with rest, those guys probably aren't going to play.
Yeah.
So, and C.J. Stroud might be chief among them. What I mean, when I'm coach speaking about how everybody would be out there, everybody who's healthy, everybody who's not, like any other NFL game. It's just the bar gets lowered a little bit for what keeps you out of the game.
I'm a simp. My notes for that cut, he's clearly playing everyone, and for how long will depend on the game. I take D'Amico at his word, man, and I don't.
Sean, I admire you and other people who are pure of soul who watch sports year after year year. You know who does this? John McClain, who should be cynical as all get out, and in some ways is sometimes. When a coach says, no, we're never going
to
cut that guy or whatever,
he'll
say, hey, he said he was never right. They do it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm here for life.
Yeah.
The college coach. Nope. No plans on leaving. And people believe them.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me every year.
How
do you keep doing it?
I don't know. It's amazing. I don't know. As long as this is how I am and this is how I'm going to be and you're cool with it, that's really all that matters.
I just feel like I should be taking advantage of you more often.
Yes.
I feel like you're easily duped.
New Year's resolution. Hello. Take advantage of Sean more often.
Everybody who thought Tom Herman was never going to leave U of H, I just want to sell them things.
I
want to get into a pyramid scheme.
Bad liar. That one I did not believe. I was not on that
train. But there were a lot of people that did. Are the people that I want to... I don't want them to miss out on the money-making opportunity of a lifetime.
Right.
Because if they get in now, Sean, they're going to... Boy, riches beyond their wild beliefs. You must believe in me.
There's only so many spots available for this great investment opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got you. I can't wait to talk to you after the show.
Did you ever fall for a pyramid scheme when you were a kid?
I never did. I never did.
I once printed off 1,000. I snuck into my mom's office and printed off 1,000 pamphlets that you could sell for how to make money in a system that's... basically selling pamphlets about how to make money.
Dude. Remember Don LaPree? Tiny classified ads.
Yeah,
that was good stuff.
There's always somebody on TV selling you something that will make you rich beyond your wildest dreams, and you're like, well, how come you're doing this instead of that? That thing that you're talking about. Because I want to give back.
Right.
That's why.
That's right.
It's because your plan is to get other people into
Don LaPree.
I probably paid like $25 for that pamphlet that told me how to make pamphlets and sell them.
See, well, that's why you're so... I mean, sometimes you got to go through some things to get to the level you're at now. You know, like, that was
I stole my... I basically stole... I didn't know how much printer ink cost back then.
Yeah.
Who knows how much money in printing out all those pamphlets, not to mention the staples to put them together, you know, because you folded it. It was a real classy affair.
Oh, I wish I could go back and watch
this. How many reams of 25-pound paper I took? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. All right, continuing with D'Amico Ryans. Number two takeaway. Number one takeaway, he says he's playing everyone. We'll see what happens. Number two takeaway, no excuses for C.J. Stroud. He was asked about C.J. mentioning, after the Ravens game, casually mentioning he's a little banged up right now.
The piece about C.J. being banged up is, you know, I think that's real, and that's real for everyone in the league at this time of the year. Everybody is banged up. The amount of games, guys that play, the snaps that they play, like everyone is banged up. That's what it is. That's NFL football this time of year. Yeah, you try to manage it as best you can, but it's also we all have to fight through, push through, and a lot of guys are fighting through a lot of things, not only CJ, but a lot of guys are fighting through, and that's the nature of what we do. And that's, and also shows how resilient these guys are, what they go through and what they battle through, that a lot of people would never know that they're fighting to go out there and still go perform and ask to perform at a high level.
That's the art of equivocation, this coach speak, and D'Amico's getting really good at it because the fact of the matter is it's true. It is true. Everybody's banged up. So without having to say, like, CJ's not banged up or CJ is banged up, you just say, hey, everybody's banged up. You can say the same thing about cancer. We've all got cancer. Everybody's got little microscopic bits of cells that usually, if your immune system's doing the job, it sweeps it up immediately. It's when it grows out of control. So there's different levels of we're all banged up and or we all have cancer.
I did not see that comparison coming.
Sometimes it's sometimes it gets real bad. But sometimes it's just like, oh, no, my immune system took care of it.
Oh, really? I got cancer cells floating around in me right now?
Well, a little, like a little cell, yeah, and your body just wipes it out.
Okay.
It's just, yeah, for
damn
various
right it
reasons
does.
Every now and then.
Damn
it's,
right it does, yeah.
I don't know. That's what I read in a pamphlet that I bought in a scheme in which I was going to get rich
pamphlet.
Selling cancer pamphlets to people. Yeah,
that's what was in the pamphlet, eh?
You can get rich. You know how you get rich selling cancer pamphlets? The tobacco industry.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. have a pack of cancer pamphlets.
There's a lot of good advice being doled out in this segment. Last one from D'Amico here. Three things that we learned from the press conference, or that D'Amico spoke on. This is the biggest things yesterday. Number three, Deontay Johnson, the newest Houston Texan. He's got a clean slate in D'Amico's eyes.
With Deontay, adding him to our team, a guy who has talent, he's done it. You know, at a high level for other teams. It's bounced around a little bit here. As I mentioned to him, of course, it's a clean slate starting with me. It really doesn't matter what has happened in the past or what the narrative is about you. You come here and everything is a fresh start. And so we'll see how he can help us, what he can add to our team, you know, on the field and off the field.
Okay. So there you go. Deontay Johnson wearing jersey number 82.
Yeah. Somebody earlier asked whether if CJ doesn't play, how does he develop chemistry with Deontay Johnson at game speed? My simple answer is to that is I don't care. Because right, there's a lot of things that you'd love to have be perfect and ideal. CJ's, if you look at one thing that could actually take this offense over the hump, if CJ is indeed injured enough that the cells have turned to cancer, I fact-checked myself on that, everybody. It's way more complicated than the way I presented it. surprise, surprise.
I fact-checked myself during a 30-second cut from D'Amico Ryans.
Surprise, surprise. Yes, I'd heard the cut before. Look, identify the one biggest thing that could make the biggest difference. If CJ getting marginally healthy is a thing that could improve his play, that matters way more than a few targets to Deontay Johnson. Because
yes.
You're not going to, it's not like in one game you're going to all of a sudden have picture perfect chemistry with Deontay Johnson. Take care of that in practice and walkthroughs and everything else like that. CJ's health, if hypothetically he is banged up enough that it's bothering him, that's the biggest improvement you can make right now to fix or to be better at things that you haven't been good at for 17 weeks. Like, it's not, I don't know what anybody thinks they're going to accomplish in a quarter of football that they haven't been able to figure out over 17 weeks.
I'm with you.
It's nut cutting time.
Yep.
You got to do the biggest possible thing to boost you, and that would be, all right, I almost hope CJ is really, really banged up, because that would mean that, okay, maybe a week off really could be the elixir for some of these things.
Yeah, we'll find out more tomorrow when they practice, man. Is CJ going to be on the injury report? Is he truly, like, is he banged up with something specific, or is he banged up the way D'Amico just described it, which is, hey, everybody's got a little something going on, you know, right now.
I wonder if he does hit the Toradol or not. That's it's a big step in a young professional football player's life when you decide to start getting the Toradol shot.
Because
that makes everything feel all right.
Yeah,
it's not psychological. It's not a psychoactive drug at all or anything. But it makes you feel like you're wearing bubble wrap all over you.
Really?
It's a, yeah. Not like, because the way I first said it, it almost sounded like Vicodin or something. Like, no. Just physically, everything just hurts a little bit less. It's
someone
nice.
Just needs to put the needle, like, on CJ's chair in front of his locker.
You know what it actually feels like? It feels like somebody put WD-40 in all your joints.
Okay.
It's just kind of like everything is just loose, like, yeah, more fluid. It just, when you're at the end of a season, most guys are probably on average dealing with, like, 2.5 injuries of some sort.
Sure.
And then all the other just normal soreness that you get used to, it just makes it all feel all right. Yeah.
Every season for you, or just a few seasons that you did the old
team? Oh, I was always perpetually
yeah.
coming off of a surgery or something.
Yeah. I like it.
It's the T-train. You line up. you line up and just boom, boom, boom.
The T-train. All right. Payne and Pendergast with
you. It's a shot you take in your butt. I guess I didn't explain that. Yeah. You get the Toradol shot.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Final segment coming up. We'll talk to the guys on In the Loop. It's New Year's Eve. CBSSports.com has New Year's resolutions for each of the 32 NFL teams. What is the Texans' New Year's resolution? That is next.
Yes.
All right. Do you believe in New Year's resolutions, Seth? Are you one of the...
Oh. I thought you were going to ask me a much more important question, like, do I believe in either Santa Claus or God or something else like that? I was like, hey, Sean, I just botched the cancer discussion. Do you really want to go hardcore into theology now?
No, this is easy.
Do I believe in New Year's resolutions?
Yeah.
I do, yes. And I followed through on a few of them.
What's your normal shelf life for a New Year's resolution? Like, do you bail, like... In the past, if you had ones like of getting in shape
past,
and you bail?
Oh, in the past, like a week, you know. I think over the last few years, I've kind of been more realistic about it. And I have my habits spreadsheet that I do every day. So I actually keep up with them because I've got a daily checklist of things I have to tick off. So like with my, like this last year, I was going to lose weight. So it's been I monitor it every single day because it's on my daily checklist of things.
That's cool. You got a habits checklist?
A habits checklist, yeah. I've got a spreadsheet that I get a red box or a green box on that item on that day, and it's month by month. So, like, as the month is going along, if I see a lot of red, I'm like, all right, I got to get my crap together. I'm not really... So, and by the end of the month, they're like, oh, that's a lot of green. Okay, good job.
Good
and then I try
you,
to improve
man.
On it the next week, next
this,
month, yeah.
I got a list of to-dos, and so many of them are just, they've been sitting on here. Like, the biggest to-do is rewriting this list, like, every 2 weeks. I'm like, all right, now I'm going to do these things. But
I'm going to collate this and prioritize,
so
and yes.
Jealous that you're good at this habits thing, man. Good for you.
Well, the other thing that I've done, too, to try to just manage kind of... You know, getting overwhelmed with how big your list is. I try to do things in groups of threes now.
Okay.
So I have like I do little triads of tasks. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to attack these three tasks. Going to get it done. And I'm going to take a break, and then I'm going to attack these other three tasks. And I'm only allowed to work on tasks. Ideally,
in
I'm only
box.
Working on one box until that box is complete.
Oh, that's really good. And that's the dopamine. I completed everything in this little box right here. Okay.
Yeah, just try to. I try to break everything down to as small a task as possible. So some of these boxes are really one task, but it's the three steps that I need to complete in that task.
Yeah, my New Year's resolution I think is going to be to try to build my social media a little bit more. I've been telling myself I got to do it the last couple years, and the monitor.
I think that was
the
your resolution last year.
I think it might have been, and I did okay, but like I need to like focus on it more hardcore this year. more content for the people. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
I've always found that if you really want to do something, incentivize yourself with money. And and especially if you really want to get a good something, make a have a contractual obligation.
Yes.
Like start, hey, maybe you're a good cards player. You start being a pro full-time gambler, you're going to get way better, way faster.
Yes.
So if you accept a job, you're gonna get better at it, Sean. So you need to go work at Google is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Or X.
Here. I like what I'm doing.
You're going to give up our hours for working for Elon Musk.
I'll just do what Doug Gottlieb does. Like, apparently you can just host a radio show and still go do another really important job out there. You know,
Musk ain't going to let that fly, man. You got to be there 12 hours a day at least.
That's
okay.
True.
You're not going to be able to work both these jobs.
Musk ain't Wisconsin Green Bay. No. He's Musk.
Yeah.
So CBSSports.com has a New Year's resolution for each of the 32 NFL teams. I would say this is a good one for the Texans. Fix the front. CJ Stroud's accuracy, touch, and comfortability have all regressed, but he's also rushed his process behind a shoddy, streaky offensive line. Okay, streaky is an interesting word. That would imply that there's actually long spells of good play with this line. I don't know that that's the case. As you pointed out, it's gotten better, I guess, than it was during the really, really bad times. He says pass catching depth would also help, but the trenches are vital. That's a good New Year's resolution. Nick, if you're listening, if you're writing down your New Year's resolutions, and by the way, Nick Caserio seems like the last person who does New Year's resolutions, right?
Yeah.
Like that Nick waits till January 1st to do some form of self-improvement feels like the most opposite Nick Caserio thing ever. Like
I think Casario's got a rolling. I would guess he's kind of the kind of person that's had a rolling five-year plan or five-year set of goals for the last since he was 14 years old.
Yes. Yeah. But if you're listening, Nick, this is a good New Year's resolution. Fix the front.
The phrasing of all of that, talking about the front and the trenches and everything, this book I'm reading, Blood Red Snow, about this German soldier on the Russian front, I'm just thinking about what the Texans' offensive line would look like in the face of a tank assault. Oh, boy.
They'd be well-dressed.
Boy, just fleeing backwards across frozen rivers as fast as they possibly could.
Dude.
Yeah, they would be. They'd be like, you know what they'd be doing? They'd be like tanks would be rolling over their trenches because they were too busy trying to find the height in Russian boot fashion from dead soldiers.
Right.
They'd be like, oh, no, go ahead. No, yeah, we're fine. We don't need to protect that village. That guy's got a snazzy pair of fur boots. I'm going to go get those.
Yeah, how'd the war go? Our drip was amazing. Yeah. That's how it went. I will say this. This is... It's going to be an interesting offseason, man, because this is not that Nick Caserio hasn't had to fix things before. He inherited maybe the worst situation that any GM has ever inherited when it came to the cap, lack of draft capital, your quarterback wanting out, and then your quarterback being untradeable because of issues off the field.
Yeah.
But this is going to be interesting because this is a very specific thing that needs fixing. And,
right.
I think there's multiple ways to get there, and I think you probably aren't just deploying one of them. Like, fire the offensive line coach. Okay, you don't stop there. That doesn't make all five of these guys great players all of a sudden. Like,
Right, and yeah, and I think that, you know, the O-line propaganda cabal gets together and they get people to try to focus on PFF pass protection grades and everything. They're the way everybody on that offensive line plays, including the offensive tackles, who are good at pass protection, but not so great at run blocking. There's not a grittiness there. There's not a competence as a unit, and there's nobody really along the offensive line that should be safe. Even the guys who do have a natural grittiness about them, like Shaq Mason, Shaq's old. He's just not the player he used to be. A complete and total swapping out of the offensive line, if it were possible cap-wise, it doesn't even seem extreme at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get swarm mentality guys out there, or at the very least guys who can capably play complete football, not just pass protection, but run blocking as well.
Yeah, the line needs new leadership. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think talent is the issue. There's plenty of physical talent on that offensive line. It needs an attitude adjustment.
The other, and I would go too, as long as Bobby Slowick doesn't, if he remains, you're just fooling yourself if you think Dalton Schultz is going to be a driving force behind becoming a great play-action football team. He flat out can't block at all. And every now and then he has a nice one, but like it's just he's so routinely getting absolutely destroyed. So when I talk about the blocking, I need to be better about including the tight ends in that. The upside is Cade Stover, perhaps. Brevin Jordan doesn't help you out as a blocker if he comes back. It's just they've got systemic issues in their level of physicality in the run game.
Yeah, Jordan will be back. He signed an signed a contract. So it's like a 1-year deal.
I mean, so now you've got two guys who are better receivers than they are blockers. There's a lot on Cade Stover developing ASAP as a blocker.
No doubt. Seth, I enjoy a good checklist. This is a texter. Do you have your Excel spreadsheet with all of the equations and formulas?
I've got some equations and formulas. I've got a financial spreadsheet where that's got all the formulas.
Nice.
The spreadsheet, I try not to. Sometimes when you start tracking fitness or calories or anything like that, there's a tendency to get, like for me at least, I get a little too obsessive with it. So that's why I went to that red, green color system.
Yeah.
Because I can just look at it and intuitively know if I'm on track or not. I can just glance at it and be like, that's a lot of red. All right, I'll snap back at it.
Yeah, that's good.
On the financial side, it's fun. The finances, I need more just knowing exactly where every penny is.
Yeah.
Not because of a lack of discipline on my part, more so than that there have been times where I've had fraud that I did not discover until like 9 months later. And the bank's always a little extra skeptical when that happens. Like, wait a second. So you're going to tell me this $6,000 in charges was fraudulent and you're reporting it now?
In March.
I'm like, yes. You got to understand my life, man. Yeah. It's a mess.
Yeah, it's funny. Text message, is Deontay Johnson playing the whole game or will he be considered a starter and play a half? Okay, well, first of all, we don't know what D'Amico is doing with the quote-unquote starters yet. But let's assume that there is a quick hook for starters in this game. Look, Deontay Johnson hasn't played a snap as a Houston Texan, but considering what he brings to that receiver room, you could argue he's certainly in the upper half of valuable players on this football team.
I'm going to put the goal. I'd like to see Deontay Johnson get at least 40 snaps and 15 targets. I just go ahead, even if it's Davis Mills throwing to the ball, just get him hungry for more, get him in like as comfortable as you can, and just try to feed it to Deontay.
I think that'd be more than he got in his like 2 months with the Ravens.
I know. He'll feel so special.
He will. Yeah.
Sean, real quick before we get too far away from the New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
It's not enough for you to have this vague goal of like getting more active on social media. You need to set some goals.
I need to set, you need like a number of Instagram followers that I got to get to.
Either that or if you want to just try to focus on the process that will lead to that ultimately, it's just like, okay, number of posts per day. Are you posting at least once on each platform
That's
per
true.
Day?
That's true. That is something Casario would do. He would focus on the process.
Focus on the process, the success. Figure out all the things that would make you get a huge increase and then just really dial in on doing those things.
That's good
and
advice,
that way
you're
a success. That way you're not gone down in the dumps on a day where you don't gain any followers. You're like, okay, but I put out a post and I'm good to go.
If I keep doing this, if I stay after it and follow the process.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, good stuff. John Lopez, Reggie Adetula are here.
How many thirst traps a day? How many thirst traps a day?
Yeah, you mean that he's posting or that he's like viewing?
I'd be interested in both pieces of information.
What are they?
What are thirst traps?
Yeah, I don't even know what a thirst trap
is. This is brilliant.
That's probably,
Sean, this is brilliant by him. Or rather, Seth. I'm talking directly to Seth here. This is brilliant by Sean to pretend like he does not know. To avoid all culpability here, right? Like, I'm not going to get myself in trouble if I'm the guy who's just like, what's a thirst trap?
Well, I may know what it is, but I don't know the label.
You know what it is.
I do?
It's a picture of an attractive person.
Oh, right?
Specifically designed to try and, that's the trap aspect of it, right? Specifically designed to try and, bait people in.
Okay. So you think I need to be shirtless on Instagram a little bit more this year?
Do you guys? Yes, for one, yes.
I think there's people that like the bald head. I feel like if you play that.
No, everybody's got a fetish. Like I'm
there's
somebody's
a thing
type.
For everybody.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
Yeah, you do have to do that. Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
Hey, are you guys, when you're on, I don't go on Facebook often at all. Apologies to everybody that sent me DMs. I'll check them in like 6 months. But I am always, I guess one of the things is I'll get a friend request, like a notification. And so I look at the friend requests and just whatever. But like you get the friend requests where you're like, okay, obviously this is obviously a dude pretending to be a woman or whatever. Like you can tell it's like, you know, like I find you fascinating. I'd like to be friends. Do you guys like, but then you see that they're friends with a couple of your guy friends.
Yeah. And you're like, come on.
Like my high school teacher is friend. I'm like, oh man. Oh, he fell for this. Oh yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Oh man. Now I'm trying to think. Like usually when I'm confirming people as friends on Facebook,
you seem really interesting.
Well, I don't. I don't confirm off of a DM, but oftentimes like my confirming new friends on Facebook process happens like 3 times a year. Mm-hmm. Like if you have requested friendship with me on Facebook, you are sitting in a queue right now that's been sitting there for 3 months. But then I have this burst of activity where I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go through and confirm these friends. And I often do look and see like how many crossover friends they've got with me. But it needs to be, okay, so I don't feel, unless I've got a ton of stupid people that I'm friends with, which is definitely a distinct possibility. I don't often do the ones that it's only friends with like two
it's
obscure
gotta be like
people. It's got to be like you, Lopez. It's got to be like if it's a lot of radio hosts, I'm like, all right, this is a listener.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
so
exactly.
Okay, we can be friends.
Who's the specific mutual? Because I feel like we all do this where there's like, hey, mutual friends that if you're mutual friends with them, I think that I should follow you no matter the platform. Mm-hmm. Do you have like at least in your mind, like at least, you know, okay, if I see this person, I know that this is a good follow.
Oh, like if I see somebody
here, Sean is on my list.
Okay,
Sean and maybe some other listeners.
Okay,
And then I've got my fishing group.
Yep,
if like Captain Scott, Captain Dean,
are
mutual. I'm like, okay, you know that kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah, I would say like any like if there's multiple 6'10" personalities that are friends with somebody, then I'll just go ahead and give it to the old confirm.
Yeah.
The old
sometimes some of our listeners that have been longtime listeners, you see a few of them, even if they don't follow, like it's like, oh, okay, this is they're one of the tribe.
Now, the thing you got to be careful of is if I thought I was already friends with this guy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's a, you know, now you're friends with some bot that's impersonating him. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.